Thank you very much, Joan. A privilege, really, to come into your home and to interview you. So the recordings will be, I'll look at them carefully and use my common sense, and you know, if any bits need to be taken out, I'll take that. So the first question is, where were you born?
I was born in Liverpool in 1933. So that makes me nearly 85.
So you're born in Liverpool, so that means you came to Caldecott at some later stage in your life. So can you tell us what brought you to Caldecott?
I became a Methodist minister, having had a religious experience, as it were, in Liverpool. I then went into the forces. I trained as a carpenter and joiner in Liverpool, and then I went into the forces because in those days, the war was on, Second World War, and if you were doing an apprenticeship, as I was, you didn't get to do your national service in the forces until you were 21. So I went into the forces then. And after that, I went into Bible College and went on to the ministry, trained as a Methodist minister in Leeds. I had my first appointment just outside Leeds.
Yeah.
And eventually, my work really brought me to Caldecott.
So for how long had you been... had that ministry before you came here? Was it new when you came, or
the town here?
Your ministry.
My ministry.
Yeah.
My ministry. I started in 1958, and I've gone on really since then.
Yeah.
I came to Caldecott in 1980, end of 1983, having previously been in Yorkshire for 3 years, and then in Essex and Basildon for 5 years. And then I went to Cwmbran, which was a new town in those days. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 15 years. And after that, I came here to Caldecott.
Did you choose to come to Caldecott, or were you posted to Caldecott?
The system was, it was reciprocal, really. The folk knew of Caldecott, went to the local church, knew about me, and I knew about them because I was only 15 or so miles down the road. They asked if I'd come, and Caldecott was as good as anywhere else to go, really.
Could you say something about the way... I think you've touched on it there, but the way it works in the Methodist Church, as far as how the minister comes to be in a place.
Yeah, in Methodism, really, the church is divided into districts, and then what we call circuits, which virtually are just groups of churches in specific areas. And each area, each circuit, depending on its size and how many members there may be in that group, has X number of ministers. And I think when I came here, there was a minister at Chepstow. There were only two of us, actually. Mm. Only two of us when I came here. And Caldecott, well, Caldecott had always been, I felt, sort of the ugly sister of the communities, because Abergavenny was well known, Monmouth was well known, and wherever else. But Caldecott was, Chepstow was well known, but Caldecott was always the one out on the limb. And I never quite understood, well, I know why it was, because Caldecott grew out of the fact that down the road they built the steelworks, and and what was here in Caldicot a village began to grow, because this is where they built the housing for the steel workers and so on. And the little village became, well, it's not a big town, but it became a town. And that's really what I came into.
And the church, I've seen the church is in the centre of the town. So is that an old church? Was that, has that always been a Methodist church?
It's it has been there over 100 years now. I think we're looking at 150 years. In fact, I did with Peter Strong a celebration for the 100 years anniversary. I have a copy of a tape recording we did, which you can have one of. It was a, we did it on, did it in the chapel, and most of the youngsters came from the local school. I was governor at the local school, so did a project with Peter, and we got all the youngsters involved in that when it was 100 years old. So, yeah, they're looking at 150 years now.
I mean, I would appreciate that. I'll be able to copy it, I'm pretty sure. Is it a cassette tape or?
It's the old-fashioned tape.
Yeah. I'm sure we can do something with that. So when you came, where did you live?
The church had a manse, a house, along Church Road, which was really handy because you could walk from the house. Just through the village, past the shops and so on, because the chapel is at one end of the other end of the village, as it was then. You bump into everybody. So it was a nice place to have the manse, I think, because it meant that as one of the local ministers, you walked through the town and you could see everybody and say hello to everybody and so on. It was really good, yes. It was fine.
And for you, that was very important to be part of that community.
Well, yes, I'm sure it's important. I mean, you have to get to know people, they have to get to know you and relations. You know, I've been here a long time now, and I don't know how many people's weddings I conducted, how many children I baptized, and how many funerals I've taken. But over a lot of years, you make those links with people, and I still bump into people. And someone said to me only the other day, you married me 35 years ago, so it's important to make those connections. And the thing is that when you once made a connection with the family, it seems to stay. You know, if you've baptized a baby and then before you know where you are, grandmother or granddad has died, they say, oh, we'll have that minister that baptized the baby and so on. So the links grow over the years.
And you become part of...
And you become part of the community.
Part of the community. Yeah. So the manse, what sort of building is it? Is it a detached, is it semi-detached?
It was... a semi-detached house is the manse. They're quite nice old houses along Church Road. Four bedrooms, and downstairs there were three rooms plus the kitchen. There was a lounge and a study and then a little box room, which was also used as a study, and a kitchen and a really big back garden that backed onto the local junior school. It was fine.
And did you garden yourself?
Being a city boy, I'm not really a gardener. I could cut the grass, and I did. Yeah. I did grow a bit of carrots and potatoes and things for a while, but I'm not really a gardener. No.
Easier to buy it in the supermarket.
Get them in a bag in the supermarket. Yeah, indeed.
And the church, tell me about the church. I've not been in the church. Can you talk about the church?
Church, yeah.
Yeah.
When I came, the building was not in a good state. In fact, it was in a dreadful state, I think. So my first thoughts were that we really have to do something to make the building comfortable and airy and so on. Because I had been converted under a minister in Liverpool, and his motto was that you had to have the right sort of building so that people were comfortable in it and felt it was an easy place to be. And I've always made that my kind of one of my priorities, really. No point having a building that's dingy and dirty and cold. Who wants to go there? I wouldn't want to go there. So, you know, why should anybody else want to go? So I actually, I think, upset some people when I first came, because the church needed a real refurbishment. And we had a lot of discussion about it, and some people found it difficult to accept the suggestions that I brought. Because it meant really that what I wanted to do was to turn the inside of the church around. The congregation used to face one way, and really it would have been better if they could face the other way, because we could actually add to the building. So we managed to do that. And we took out a wall, and the stone we took out of the wall we used to extend what is called a vestibule, the sort of area where people first go in when they go to church. So the stone that made that part of the building came out of the wall that we took out from the back of the, what was the church then, from the church. We moved the organ from one end of the church to the other. We changed the way that people went in. We altered the doors and so on, and extended the back. And then eventually over the years, built a big extension on the back of the church with an upstairs rooms and so on and so forth, and made the whole place so that it became a usable property, which it really honestly hadn't been.
When those changes were made, quite extensive it seems to me from the way you described them, so were the congregation involved in doing some of that work themselves, or
we were involved insofar as we had to raise funds to pay for it,
yeah.
Which I forgot what the figures were now, but we had to raise a fair bit of money, which we actually did, and the whole thing went up without us owing anybody money, which was worthwhile doing. And financially, really, the place has always stayed fairly steady over the years since those days.
And you must have required specialist contractors for things like moving the organ.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So how did you find those people, and did you supervise the contracts and the process of...
Basically, yes, I did.
Yeah.
There were a couple of guys who were really helpful. You know, guys who had experience in various fields, as it were. And we pull things together and use people's skills where it's possible to do that.
And your training as a carpenter must have come in handy.
Well, it did come in handy, yes. Because yes. I knew what I wanted to do.
And could see what could be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've mentioned the entrance at the rear of the church. So when you go into the church, I've not been into the church, so what is it like when you get inside? How big is it? How many people would it hold? What sort of windows has it got?
It had, you know, those arc-shaped windows. And then at the outset, they used to have timber. Well, sadly, timber not being used in the way it used to be in former days. So we had to renew all the windows, and they went in one of these plastic sort of commodities that we use now everywhere. We changed the windows, changed the doors and so on. The organ, that was a big job. That was a big job because it really meant dismantling it and moving the pipes and everything and putting in a heating system, because when I first arrived here, the heating system were old-fashioned pipes virtually across the floor. And I remember conducting the first funeral when I arrived, and the people carrying the coffin, I thought to myself, they're going to drop it, because they had to step over these pipes to get into the where we needed to put the coffin for the service. Mm. I thought, I can't live with this, which led to the change around, of course. Mm.
And how many people does the church
hold? Well, the chapel will hold about 150 in the main body of the chapel, and we added the extension so that add a push. I think we probably had something like nearly 400 people in, because you can push various doors open, which was why I wanted to have the concertina effect, so that working from where we do now, you could have a smaller place, bit bigger, larger still, you know. That was the idea that I had in my mind, and that's worked very well.
So when you've had a large congregation, you said up to 400 people. So was that a special event?
Yes, I mean, you know, Christmas and so on, or funerals, of course.
Yeah.
In a community like this, and especially young people's funerals, you know, people used to turn out. And weddings, used to have a lot of weddings. For years, it seemed to me, I never had a free Saturday. Because so many people used to get married on a Saturday in those days, and they got married in church. Whereas now it's rare to see marriages in church. People get married in all sorts of different places for all sorts of different reasons. But sometimes the village would be brought to a standstill by a popular wedding. Saturday mornings in the village. In fact, I think the village, from a shopping point of view, tended to die as the idea of weddings began to die off. Mm. Because it's very dead in the village on a Saturday morning now.
Yeah. So the same sort of thing that's changed has affected activity within the shopping area and things like weddings.
I liked to take the service out into the open air sometimes.
I quite enjoyed
shouting my head off in the open air. So I encouraged folk to do that. And we did it at, you know, special times like Easter and Christmas and so on. And the village centre was just a place for doing that, still is.
Mm.
Especially now that there's no traffic going through the village.
Mm.
It really is good to do that kind of thing in the village.
Mm.
Yeah, it's great.
So generally, on a normal Sunday, if there's ever a normal Sunday, what sort of numbers would the congregation be? Does it fill the church, or is it less than that?
I guess we used to have on a Sunday morning, we would average 80-ish really on a Sunday morning, thereabouts, and sometimes more than that, which meant that we'd have to open the back if we had a special service, and that often happened. But an average congregation, I would have thought in those days was about 80, which was not bad at all, really.
Yeah.
And of course, we used to still have evening service in those days, but they don't happen very much now either.
Yeah.
But we used to have a useful congregation, about 40 or so in the evening. Basically the same group of people who would come twice,
yeah,
because
yeah.
people used to go twice to church
oh, yeah.
in those
yeah.
days. Whereas now they don't even go once, sadly.
So what sort of period are you referring to when the attendances were as strong as that?
Well, I came, as I say, the end of 1983. So I'm talking between sort of 84 and I did 15 years there as the minister. And it was a good church.
Yeah.
It was a strong church.
Did you see it decline during that period?
Well, it may sound a bit pompous, but no, it didn't really. I honestly think that we were very steady and strong in
yeah.
those days.
Yeah.
And church going was still, as it were, something people did.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Do you want to get that?
No.
All right. So just we'll pause whilst that means. So just watching the